our meetings, is there?
All right. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is February 28th, 2017. Colleagues, today we're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 5001, the Board of Accountancy. So let's open up that public hearing. Welcome. What do we need to know about this?
Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee. All I need to say, remind you, is that this board is entirely funded with other funds, revenues from licensing and application and fees. And with that, I will introduce you to the Executive Director, Martin Pitone.
Welcome. Come on up. And you've got your chair with you? All right. Welcome. We're glad you're here. So if you gentlemen could just introduce yourself for the record, we'll turn the floor over to you and let you run with it.
Martin Pitone, for the record, Executive Director for the Oregon Board of Accountancy, and with your permission, I'd like to have the chair introduce himself and go first, and I'll take on the remainder of the presentation.
Perfect. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. John Lossing, I'm the chair of the Board of Accountancy. Okay. Co-chair Senator Manning, co-chair Representative Smith, committee members, thank you. As I mentioned, my name is John Lossing. I am a CPA in the state of Oregon. I'm also a partner with a regional accounting firm in Oregon on the West Coast. I'm right now serving my second term on the Board of Accountancy and am the board chair right now. I'd like to start off, if we can go to the next slide, Martin. Just by introducing you to the mission of the board, our board exists to protect the public by regulating the practice of public accountancy and all services provided by licensed accountants. We were created in 1913 and currently have around 8,500 individuals and 1,000 firm licensees. Our board is seven individuals made up of five CPAs, one public member, and one public accountant. Our staff right now is eight full-time hires, and the scope of what we do is we regulate primarily the CPA practice, which was created and intended to provide assurance and a test in the form of financial statement audits, reviews, compilations. We also regulate tax and accounting services, and then other consulting type services, personal financial planning, business consulting provided by CPAs. One of the primary ways we do that, in addition to outreach and education, is through handling complaints and investigating complaints when a complaint has come forward against a licensee. Some of the examples of those that we receive are professional misconduct, integrity and objectivity, questions about whether or not a CPA handled themselves objectively and with integrity, business transactions with clients, due professional care in the practice of public accountancy, holding out as a CPA when they don't in fact have a active license, or the use of a CPA designation while lapsed or inactive. We'd just like to also say thank you for the support that we've gotten most recently for the support with a second limited duration investigator in the most recent biennium. A lot of our effectiveness is based on the amount of work that our investigators can do, and that can be a bottleneck, as well as the approval of $200,000 for a contested case that we had, as well as the second investigative spot, fee increases, the support with that. So just want to say thank you.
So, Co-Chair Senator Manning, Co-Chair Representative Smith, again, for the record, my name is Martin Pitone, and I will take on the remainder of the budget presentation, and then at the end, we'll hope to open up for any questions that you may have. I just, first of all, really want to join the sentiment just voiced by the chair for a big thank you. I came to the board in 2012, and we, and quite frankly, ever since then have received a phenomenal amount of support, including through the issues that were just raised by the chair from, you know, DAS as well as this committee to help this board get to where we can. And as part of my presentation for the remainder here, I kind of want to what you're about to hear in terms of where the board has been and where it's at could not have happened with a tremendous amount of support, both from this panel as well as DAS, as well as the folks sitting in the back of the room representing the association. So this budget, for all the right reasons, is actually probably one of the more boring ones that you will hear, because it really doesn't have a significant ask. It was already alluded to by LFO staff that it's an entirely 100% other funds budget, asking for at the governor's budget level $2.6 million in expenditure authority. We don't have any big asks in here in the form of a policy option package. There is one in here in the budget that, quite frankly, actually doesn't actually have to be in here, because in essence it is a essentially a policy option package that moves some pieces around within our existing personnel authority. It gets something really, really important done that this profession has wanted for a really long period of time, and I want to actually talk a little bit about what that is and why it's so important. So in addition to what you just heard about in terms of the support that we've gotten from this panel with respect to the investigator positions that we really needed to get on top of our complaint backlog load, when you look around regulatory boards, particularly ones that regulate complex professions, such as medical board, board of dentistry, for example, as reference points, what you'll see is that they very often require that at least one, if not more, investigatory positions for those boards require holding the credential of the profession that they regulate. And we've essentially kind of skimmed by without being able to do that. So we've always looked for CPAs. We've had real trouble, quite frankly, with our recruitments, and it's a big lift, which is accomplished in this package, for us to have worked with DAS, and there's a tremendous amount of work that's happened with DAS CHRO that I'm very grateful for, as well as the DAS Chief Financial Office, to essentially pull this package together with their support that actually finally gets us to the place where we can, quite frankly, move from begging for CPA level investigators to being able to require it, pay them somewhat better. And what we're doing in this package is essentially, and this is really where credit goes to the gentleman sitting to my right who will introduce himself later, where, you know, DAS essentially opened up an option for me that I didn't realize existed, is that essentially they said, look, if you're doing this over here, that's great, but we know you're also working on this licensing efficiency over in this other part of your shop. You can actually combine this into one package that basically says you're doing all these three things personnel-wise, and by combining them, you actually are taking money off the table. You're essentially taking an efficiency on the licensing side and paying for the improvement on the investigation side that way. And that's really important, because part of the past support that we've received, including through the fee increases from the association and from the board, there was a very public promise made that we will live within our resources. We just have gone through all these fee increases. And so to be able to essentially get our stuff done without asking for more was really, really important to us. And that's really what this package does, and kind of ties it all, and really kind of ties it all together for us. This is just the big chart overview in terms of just the comparatives. There's really very, very little difference between the agency request and the governor's budget in terms of the request level. So I'll just skip through that piece.
So really quick on that slide, yeah. Can you go back to that slide?
Sure. You may challenge my abilities here. Hang on a second.
Well, stay where you are. There we go. Talk to the committee really quick. What type of ending fund balance are you carrying, and how many months of income does that represent?
Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, in the governor's budget, There is an ending balance of about roughly $1.1 million. I just want to be really honest with the committee. We'll probably come out better than that based on the latest projections of probably roughly around 1.3. I don't want to hide that, so I don't, you know, that's just kind of out there. I will say, though, that because this board is one of the boards that has a very cyclical income flow, which means that, you know, we have our primary revenue source are the annual renewals that are coming in from licensees. That happens June 30th of every year, where every June 30th, half of our licensee base renews. So you have essentially in an even numbered year, everybody with an even number ending license renews. Mm-hmm. Odd numbers. So what that means is that we need quite a bit of cash flow to get us through. So based on the DAS analysis, and hopefully DAS can back me up on this, I believe that their calculations out of DAS are that we need at least 10 to 11 months worth of operating. And I believe that we are not much more than 2 or 3 months above that with the ending balance that we do have. So once you take the cash flow needs into consideration, there really actually isn't that much cushion above that that we'll need just from the cash flow perspective. And I could go into further detail, but that's the rough picture.
That's great, Mr. Director. And for this committee, that's important for us to understand and also for us to be sensitive to the fact that should you get into a situation, as in the past has been the case, where you have a deep investigation or an investigation with depth, it might require additional cash on hand to carry out that function. So I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted the committee to understand that.
Thank you. And I really appreciate that last comment because, quite frankly, over time in the legislature, it's not always easy to have the argument that you just brought up, Co-Chair Smith, around that an ending balance for a regulatory board serves more than one function. It isn't just about cash flow. It is your savings bank, if you will, if you have that big case coming in. So we appreciate any support that we can get for an ending balance that does a little bit more than just cover our cash flow needs, because it'll help us with our mission. All right. So again, for this panel, because we have quite a few new members, I'm going to split up kind of talking about where this board has been and where it's going into two parts. So for those who have been on this panel, there's a little bit of repetition here in terms of some of the successes we've reported to you before that we've done with the resources, and then I'll talk about kind of clearly what the new pieces are that we haven't reported on before on the next slide. So previously, what we have been able to talk with you about are the things that have happened since I've been able to join the board in November of 2012. That primarily is about web-based improvement, better access for consumers to data, such as, you know, disciplinary reporting. We are now fully linked to a national database for CPAs, and that's particularly important for a profession that's as mobile as this one is. We have done that with, quite frankly, also fantastic support from the National Association of the State Boards of Accountancy. We didn't do that totally on our own. We also, quite frankly, have been able to do other efficiency pieces with NASBA around how we deal with examinees. Because one thing I just want to put on the record in terms of what the board does is, in addition to the licensing numbers that you heard at the very initial part of this presentation, there's also significant population coming through that doesn't technically get a license, but it goes through a significant process to essentially get authority from the board to sit for the national CPA exam. So that's also another piece of the business that we do that's essentially in the pre-licensing stage. Sometimes over, for those of you that sit on panels that deal with health boards, you actually have some kind of a early license on in this process. We don't do this through a licensing process, but it's basically a quasi-licensure process of, are you qualified to sit for the national exam? And we've, quite frankly, been able to make that process for us internally a lot more efficient in terms of how we interact with that national function and that national database. So that's kind of the pieces that we were able to get done before and that we've reported on before. The part that I'm really kind of excited about being here is really to get into kind of where we are today with some of these resources. And I want to talk a little bit about what this chart represents. One of the things that we really struggled with when I came to the board in summer of 2012, the piece that I was quite frankly the most worried about is how the board was doing with respect to its compliance function, because I could tell there was a very long history from well over a decade even at that point with respect to case backlogs and cases taking a very long time to resolve. And we had only a single investigator position with an investigator who was ready to leave the agency at that point. So I was pretty worried about that piece. And prior to that time, I could tell, because you always want to look at long-term averages, the agency, when I talk about a resolution rate, what I mean by that is getting a case to a place where you can either dismiss it because there is no violation, or getting to a place where you come to a final conclusion, some kind of a final order or a contested case. Our five-year average up until that point in 2012 was about 30 to 35 cases a year, right? Now, if you look over at the total resolution charge, which is the second one from the left, right, it basically shows you that that we really, really had a difficult time through the transition. Obviously, we had a big drop down to just 25 cases in 2012 when we had the director change that year, and quite a bit of turmoil there. But ever since then, we've started creeping up with the help of the increased resources, but we weren't really able to immediately, even with two positions, getting us up to doubling our output right away, because it usually takes you a little while. First, you have to hire people, you have to train them, you may have a little bit of turnover, so it usually takes a while to work its way through the system. What I'm excited about is that blue chart that actually shows up on this on the second column, that shows that we actually finally, this is a calendar year based data, because I wanted to give you the most recent data possible, that we got our case resolution rate up to 67 cases in calendar year 2016. So there is a lot that goes into that. It's not just about increasing resources. It's also about changing our processes so that we can handle complaints more efficiently. But essentially, it represents really years worth of work and investment that we can say we're finally making progress in terms of how much do we get out the door. And quite frankly, we don't take the easy road either. If you look over to the left-hand side on the charts for disciplinary outcomes and no violation outcomes, it shows you a little bit of the intermix in terms of, you know, we don't just get rid of cases simply by dismissing them. You know, everything is handled by, you know, based on the evidence. And we actually have a significant amount of complaints that end up with a disciplinary outcome. And those take quite a bit more work. And you can tell that in the last calendar year, we are up to 36 disciplinary resolution of those 67 total. Now, if you take that in context to the next chart, which I'm also this one is more focused on just last year. What that shows you is on the one on my on your left is a continual downward progression in terms of cases pending board decision, the last number being 66. What does that mean? Pending board decision means that these are the cases that are, these are, you know, formal investigation cases, not preliminary inquiries, formal investigation cases that have not yet reached the board for a decision. Okay, there is no decision made yet as to whether there is a violation or not. And there are 66 cases right now in the pipeline. What does that mean, right? It means that basically now we're in a place that we have a year's worth of backlog left. Now, while that's still too much, it's a lot better than what it used to be.
What do we need? Are you going to talk with us or address what we need to do to get that number down? Or what do you think we need to do to get that down?
Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, I think actually at this point, because we're on the right trajectory, and we're already, you know, continually tweaking our processes, I don't think that the answer is more resources from this committee. I think we are already, with the trend lines the way they are, we should be able to essentially make continual improvements just within the resources that we have and the continual process tweaking that we've already done.
Do you feel as if due process is playing out and that they're being heard in a these will be heard in a timely manner.
Co-chair Representative Smith, I'm super happy to that you asked that question. Since I'm on the record, I'll be a little bit guarded in terms of how I say this. I will say it I will say it simply in a way that I've run many regulatory boards for the state. There is no board that I'm prouder of serving because of the level of attention to detail and due process that's taking. There are no shortcuts. Yeah. And I absolutely would prefer that maybe John Lawson can speak to that maybe a little bit, because he, prior to coming on the board, also served on our complaints committee. And actually, without trying to put him on the spot, if you don't mind, if I can just talk about for a minute or two about what that process is, if you don't mind, I'm happy to do that.
That would be great. And I just want to give my context on this. If I was a certified public accountant and I was now under investigation, I would want to know that this is being played out in a timely-like manner. And so when I look at 66 still back, I guess I'm curious, when would my case be heard, and is that timely? So that's where I'm coming at this from.
Sure. Co-chair Representative Smith, members of the committee, I previously served, as Martin mentioned, on the complaints committee, and just from a process perspective, when a complaint is lodged and an investigation is done, if it rises to the level to be reportable to the board, it first goes through the complaints committee, where it's heard, and recommendations are then made to the board. When I joined the BOAC, it was a much different. This is probably 7 or 8 years ago. It was a much different process. If anything, this board has been extraordinarily conservative in making sure that due process plays out on behalf of the public. Okay. So, because we're a board made up of 5 CPAs, we have to be sure that we're giving the case all the due process it deserves. On the other hand, as you point out, the backlog was too long, and so in the last 3 years, there's been a number of ways to expedite this. If there are cases that the board staff believe that they can handle and make a recommendation directly to the board, we've delegated authority to do that, and so we don't have to go through the complaints committee. That's helped expedite some of these cases. When there's been cases that the board feels they can just bring a recommendation, the staff feels they can bring a recommendation, they'll do that. And so the trend line is improving. And as a CPA and as a member and on behalf of my colleagues, if there's an investigation open, you're made aware of it immediately. So there's not a shroud of secrecy. Is there a complaint from several years ago? And the board is very, very clear. Board staff are very, very clear about the process and how it plays out.
Thank you. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So with that, I think I'm simply going to move on from that piece and simply talk a little bit about some of the other budget issues that need to be covered in the context of our presentation. So for historical purposes, for those of you who were here in the last budget cycle, you know that many agencies, including this one, grappled with state government service charges. In our case, we also grappled with falling ending balances. All these waters have ebbed. We've kind of made our way through those challenges, in part through the help of the fee increases, with significant support from the association and your support. What also, quite frankly, has happened in the meantime that's pretty significant for this agency is that and I'm going to kind of drop down to the last bullet here first before I spend a little bit of time talking about our KPMs, is that on the IT side, we essentially have been through two phases here. Those of you who followed this board for a while know that there were some problems that we had back 5 years ago with a failed IT project. We've stabilized the agency since that point in time. Our database is perfectly fine and stable, but it doesn't have a lot of the features that we really needed to have, including we don't have online renewals yet. What has happened here with some of the changes at DAS is that we have a much more positive environment right now with respect to the level of support we're getting from the DAS CIO office on giving us essentially resources and support to get that done right. So it no longer feels like you're quite so alone trying to figure out the right thing to do, and there is a lot more communication with that office, and that's quite frankly, while we're still in the infancy stages on our planning for kind of our next phase of improving IT, just the way that's happening right now with respect to support from the DAS CIO office is quite frankly a lot better than it was even just 2 or 3 years ago. And I think there's a lot of credit that goes to Mr. Pettit, who was brought in, I don't remember exactly when, I think 2 or 3 years ago. And I think that's probably the last piece that I'll say on that, and maybe just close with a couple of remarks on our performance measures. So I'll switch over to the specifics that you actually have in your agency reports, but basically I'll just run through them really quick. On the customer service KPM, which you probably know is pretty standardized across a lot of agencies, you will see beginning with 2014 trend lines that are getting better on that customer service KPM. And I'm certainly happy about that. The reason why I kind of discount some of the stuff prior to 2013 is because we changed our data collection method beginning with fiscal year 2014. And what that means is that we used to only collect data for this customer service performance measure in the context of our licensure renewal process, which is nice, but it's not all that we do. So what we did is basically beginning with fiscal year 2014 is that we changed our data collection process, and essentially every person who works at the board is required to have an email sign-off that directs people to give me feedback on the service interaction that you have. So we now collect data all across the enterprise, including on the compliance side, where you don't necessarily have, you know, always happy customers on the compliance side. And that's why, you know, I'm happy to say that data as of 2014 is still continually improving. The piece that you have on this slide that I'm highlighting is the one performance measure that we have where things look like they're getting worse. And just strictly speaking on the data, yes, they are. But connect this to what we just talked about. This performance measure measures the average amount of time it takes us to resolve a case. And in essence, what happened here is by us finally being able to get our backlog addressed, that means that you deal with the old cases that may have an 09, a 2012 case number attached to them. What does that do? It means that your stats on that performance measure will go down because you will have cases on here that will have sat on the docket for 3 or 4 or 5 years, right? And so by cleaning out some of our backlog, that performance measure will show the results. The easiest way for us to have, you know, to not have that result is for us to not resolve the old cases, which clearly wouldn't be the right thing to do.
So do we have the performance measures that we as a committee can be looking at?
It should be in the agency binder under first thing under special reports if you have it.
Okay. I just want to make sure the committee has access to that. Okay. Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. I'm sorry that.
Okay. Has anyone found it?
I can't find it.
Should be under if you have the PDF version of what the agency sent over, it should be tabbed, and it should be the first document under special reports tab.
Okay. Well, let's continue.
Mm-hmm. So the second performance measure after customer service is essentially a performance measure that measures simply how quickly things move from the BOA, from our complaints committee to the board. That is continually improving and kind of reflects the level of pressure, quite frankly, that we've put on the system. The performance measure after that I just talked about, that's the third one. That's the one that talks about the length of time to resolve our cases. And then there is another one that we have around how long it takes us to actually send out a complaint letter to after we get a complaint in the door, and that one has stayed pretty level and quite frankly reflects some process changes that we, quite frankly, we do a lot more process before we actually send these letters out the door, so that does not happen quite as quickly anymore. On the last performance measure, which is the one that's again standardized across a whole bunch of boards, which is the one that deals with board best practices, which has to do with, you know, is the board involved in, you know, making sure that there is, that the budget is reviewed? Does the board review the key performance measures? Is there an annual performance evaluation of the director and so on? There's like 15 measures that are in there. We've never, you know, since my time, we've never had a problem on that piece. So that one is humming along. So that's kind of the big picture on the performance measure, but I'm on the performance measures, but I'm happy to take any individual questions on that or anything else that Representative Gomberg may have in mind.
Why, Representative, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Actually, I have two questions on a predictable subject. We've been talking quite a bit about the backlog of cases and case resolution. We haven't talked as much about what happens when cases are resolved and fines are issued. And I'm looking at the trend on the delinquent debt for the board, and I'm seeing in 2014 it was about $500,000. The next year it went up $100,000 more. The next year after that, $100,000 more. So we're, for 2016, we're looking at roughly $750,000. My first question is, does that reflect the fact that you're cleaning out back cases and applying fines in those old cases, or are we issuing larger fines, or do we have more people doing bad things? Why is the number going up?
Okay. Co-Chair Representative Smith, Co-Chair Senator Manning, and Representative Gomberg, members of the committee, first of all, there is this particular increase reflects the fact that we're, quite frankly, we have a more active compliance function, and it means that we have some increases in primarily default orders. And actually what I want to do is step back briefly and tell you what the numbers actually don't talk about at all. That's really, really important contextually here. The only pieces that even show up in that $700,000 number that you've mentioned are the pieces that actually go to debt collection. There is a whole bunch of other work that you can actually follow through in terms of the revenue line. And if you look and see where the board gets its revenue, it's mostly, you know, licensee fee based. But you see about anywhere from roughly $100,000 to $150,000 biennium that we take in from civil penalties that are paid. Why is that? Our licensees have an incentive to comply with the penalties that are assessed by the board because they generally like prefer to keep their license. So the population that we're talking, so first of all, the piece that's important to put on the record is that outside that $700,000 number, there is a whole bunch of activity that occurs in the routine part of our business that where penalties are assessed and paid that simply never make it into that pool. So the real question is, so then why do we have this problem of the, you know, of the $700,000. So part of it is we've been doing more, and there are some default orders that have occurred where because people have dropped off, are not negotiating with us, essentially, and are some bad actors that have some significant orders out there that they simply defaulted on. And in fact, I'll give you a little bit of a statistic since Representative Gomberg was kind enough to give me a heads up on where he's going with this. And essentially, I looked at the data a little bit more carefully with my staff this morning, and I can basically now say that five accounts for this board account for two-thirds of the debt owed to the board. So you have, you know, a very small number of folks with a very high penalty, some of them newer, some of them older, with a whole bunch of accrued interest that simply are difficult to find, and therefore, you know, not necessarily always easy to collect on. That said, what I will also say is that when I came in the door, I could tell that this particular arena, and I'm happy to put that much on the public record, was not exactly well managed. So there was a lot of work that has been done to clean up the data, and I'm quite frankly very grateful to the Department of Revenue Other Agency Accounts Unit, Nikki Bennett over there, I'll point her out publicly, who really, really helped us with getting our stuff up and running, you know, together with our staff. We now, in the 2013-15 biennium, we collected about $46,000 gross from the Department of Revenue in this process. So that is not yet including, that does not deduct what they hold back for their costs. That's the gross collections on their side. This biennium to date, that number roughly right now is about $36,000. So there is at least activity, and I certainly wouldn't call it unsuccessful. It's simply not good enough, and it doesn't keep pace with what's happening out there, but there is activity. That may probably go a little bit deeper than what you intended with your question, but that's kind of the rough picture that I can paint for you.
Mr. Co-Chair, follow-up, and I appreciate that explanation very much. I think it's important to make it very clear, first of all, that what we're talking about here are not people that are purchasing licenses, but rather people that have been fined. Second of all, that the number we're talking about is not necessarily the total number of fines that were issued, but rather those that you've had some difficulty collecting on. Mm-hmm. And it's remarkable to me that two-thirds of this amount is in five individual accounts. That would reflect roughly about $500,000, which means that the other 35 people that I see listed here as delinquent accounts would reflect another $250,000. So at some point, we're talking about taking that debt and shifting it over to the Department of Revenue. My question is, how do we save the Department of Revenue that problem? If I could give you a blank check to go out and collect more of this money, what would you be doing? Would you need more people who would be focused on collections? Would you need improvements in your IT system to track people down? Would you hire private investigators? How do we get some of this money that some bad actors in Oregon owe the state of Oregon?
Co-Chair Representative Smith, Co-Chair Senator Manning, and Representative Gomberg, I would respectfully say that I would prefer to move in a completely different direction.
Please.
And here's why. This is a small agency. We have, currently 8 under this proposed budget, 7.5 FTE. We need to focus on our core business. Building expertise on how to do collections well really isn't something we have the capacity to do well inside this agency. So I'm actually happy that there is a bill out there that I can, publicly talk about, because it is an executive branch bill coming from the governor's office, Senate Bill 89, that essentially proposes to essentially take some of that control away from agencies and essentially consolidate this function over at DOR, because to me, quite frankly, there is a much better chance at doing this better and building the expertise if you have essentially a center of experts on how to do this, rather than asking a whole bunch of smaller and medium-sized agency heads to build their own expertise on how to do it. I hope that that's an okay answer, but that's really my preferred policy preference in terms of if I was king of the hill, I would prefer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's an excellent answer, by the way. I mean, we have Senate Bill 89, which is heading through the process, and that would consolidate delinquent debt in the Department of Revenue. We've talked before about the fact that small and medium-sized agencies don't really have a robust collection department. It's interesting to me that that's a message we're getting from the Board of Accountancy, who are more familiar with dollars and numbers than arguably some other agencies might be. But at the end of the day, we've got $750,000 in a small agency that's out there. We need to figure out a more effective way to get some of that money back and put it to good use.
Good point. Very good point. Any other questions? I want to go back to KPM number 3. Can we go back to that one more time?
Yeah. I just need to make sure that I know that which one we're
talking
about.
Yeah, take your time on looking that up.
Let's see here. KPM number 3.
Oh, yes, this is the aging one. Yes. Yeah, so I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But I'm still struggling a little bit, because as we look at our target, and by the way, colleagues, it's the number of days taken to complete a report, an investigative report. As we look at the target from 2012 to 2016, the board and the legislature have created a set of goals where there's kind of a downward trend to where we wanted to get from 180 days to complete a report to 155. And it's moved in the opposite direction from 155 up to 440 days. Mm-hmm. And I hear you loud and clear that some of the more difficult cases will soon be coming off the books, and it'll trigger a downward movement towards reaching our goal. What I'm curious about is, in the effort to assist, does it make sense to add one more position to get there? I mean, if you look at that trend in the number of days it's taken, it's gone from 155 to 236 to 350 to 367 to 440. Why wouldn't we take a look at maybe a limited duration position for 2 years so we could get from 440 down to that 155 and then let you work at that?
So, Co-Chair Representative Smith, Co-Chair Senator Manning, members of the committee, actually, inside the budget, and I probably should have mentioned this earlier, the component, and actually LFO staff, I think, can attest to this as well, the biggest component that the agency has really some control over in terms of how and where it spends its money is the professional services category inside SNS, inside the service and supplies budget. And the reason I'm pointing that out is because we have actually already gotten somewhat of an increase. I believe it was in the last budget cycle, in terms of the amount of money we get for professional services and DOJ. Why do I point that out? Because we also work with a cadre of contract investigators, and I probably should have put that on the record just for context purposes. So we actually have an RFP out there where we have folks that have qualified through a request for proposal process that we also use and pay for through that professional services line item to help us get cases done on a contracts basis. That essentially, to me, is by far the best tool to deal with the more temporary needs rather than having a formal position added in all of this. And quite frankly, we are using those resources, and we are really appreciative of them. I mean, there's upsets and downsets that come with contract investigators, but to me, particularly with the volatility of that particular issue, it seems to be a more appropriate way of dealing with that through that budgetary vehicle than essentially necessarily having a formal staff position, okay, which creates a much more of a longer term issue.
So let's I hear you loud and clear. I haven't heard from industry on this. Mm-hmm. And so to me, with the co-chair's direction and with LFO's direction, I guess we'll continue down this path. Mm-hmm. But at some point, if it becomes obvious that the trend is continuing to go mm-hmm. up, I would hope you would visit with us so we can address that issue. But it sounds like you've got a plan. Yeah. It sounds like you know what you're doing.
Co-Chair Smith and Co-Chair Senator Manning, I would simply respectfully say that if you asked me what my preference was in terms of additional help, mm-hmm. you know, I have to be here and support the governor's budget, so I really can't. I don't have the authority to say, please do X that's not in the governor's budget.
Okay, I see his knee twitching.
I can't do that. Right. However, if you were to pretend that I'm not from the Board of Accountancy and simply say what would I do? My first choice would be is to probably get a little bit of an additional reserve where we could possibly have a bit more resources in the professional services line item working through the contract investigators.
I see.
On that piece, particularly also because I can quite frankly tell that our Department of Justice resources next year will probably be something that I'll have to compensate for in part out of professional services, because I expect a pretty significant jump in the fee-for-service assessment that we'll get from the Department of Justice. So if you asked, I'm happy with the budget as it is, but if there is an insistence on doing more, I would prefer that the attention be focused on the professional services line item, because that's where we have the most flexibility to deploy resources to the situation at hand, if I may go that far without getting looks from my right.
You bet. I appreciate that, and I'll refer to LFO.
Chair Smith, may I add to that?
Yeah, please.
In addition to that, there are three other reasons why I think that avenue is good. One is because it's really difficult to find qualified CPAs right now. So if we're trying to fill a third position, that's difficult. Number two, and probably the most important one, is so many of these cases that we deal with require a specific expertise. And so the agility to be able to go hire a forensic auditor or someone who specializes in tax, or someone who's got a deep history of investigation like that, has been really nice. The third benefit is also that you avoid all of the additional overhead associated with managing another employee.
Okay. Well, I have not heard from industry on this issue. This committee wants to assist and to be a good partner with you. So
I really appreciate
this conversation.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Are you wrapped up?
Depends on if there are questions or not.
Any questions from the committee?
Yeah,
Representative.
So thanks for your presentation. That's helpful. So you just talked about you're expecting increased expenses with the Department of Justice. What do they do for you? Can you just give me a highlight of what kind of work they do for you?
Well, in general, primarily what it comes down to is that all the regulatory boards have essentially someone who's assigned by the Department of Justice to serve as board counsel. So that basically that means is that that's your go-to person to answer, to ask questions to. That's the person that shows up and counsels the board at board meetings. That's the person that also shows up at our complaints committee meetings and helps us, may provide some directions and help resolve legal issues. They go out there and quite frankly, sometimes help me with really complex settlements. In some of the cases, some of them I can do myself. Some of them I definitely need DOJ help on, because they sometimes are very sophisticated and even multiple lawyers in the room. So we get a lot of kind of, quite frankly, assistance from the Department of Justice just through that piece. And then that same person that's assigned as board counsel is also the person, if in those rare cases, and fortunately for us it is rare, where we have to take something where we can't get to a settlement and we have to take something into what is called a contested case process, board counsel is also the same counsel that DOJ provides to essentially be the administrative lawyer for the board and represents the board in the administrative case proceeding. Beyond that, what's also covered in the DOJ piece is that, if I, on the rare occasions where I may have questions around a contracts issue, I can go to the contracts unit. That won't happen from board counsel, get specialized advice. In the hopefully very rare occasions where the board gets sued, that is not handled by board counsel, but a different unit in DOJ called the trial division, and those services are included in the DOJ piece as well. So if the board somehow were to get in trouble and we need, get a suit, then DOJ steps up and does that for us as well. That's kind of the rough overview summary of kind of the types of assistance that pretty much any regulatory board gets from the Department of Justice.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mark, you're up. Welcome.
Members of the committee, Representative Smith, Senator Manning, my name is Mark Miedema. I represent the Chief Financial Office and presenting the governor's budget. I will be probably pretty quick because I think Mr. Pione gave you a really good overview. In terms of emerging issues and being a CPA, I kind of have a little bit of insight in some of the stuff for the Board of Accountancy, but You know, basically, accounting is going international, and so making sure that the board can regulate based on those international standards, because we're seeing changes, you know, like I said, GASB, FASB, moving to that international level. The governor's budget does maintain current operations. There is the policy option package, which I will talk about later, and the budget uses the statutory level of fees that were established last biennium for licensees and then approved by the 16 legislature in terms of the fees that are established by rule for the board. And so over the last three bienniums, here you can just kind of see the breakout between personal services and their S&S. You can see that the expenditures have gone up slightly, and also we are currently looking at cutting one of the, I'm going to say secretary, but I mean the office specialist position to a half-time position because of the improvements that the board was able to make with that. And talking about revenues for the board, 94% of their revenues come from the licensing base, and CPA fees are due in June. So when we talk about the ending balance, we are looking at the high point of the board's cash balance. And again, as Martin indicated, CPAs pay on a biannual basis. Those with an even number license pay on even numbered years, odd numbered years. Firms pay once during the biennium, and they pay in December of that odd numbered year. And we've already talked about the ending balance, but you know, $1.1 million in approximately 11 months, just under 11 months. And here you can kind of see this works with the beginning balance. So the blue is the beginning balance. As you can see, it was growing through 11-13, and then it was shrinking, and then you know, through the help of the OSCPA, the board was able to get a fee increase, and you can kind of see how that fee increase is going. And then also, as Martin had talked about, you can see the level of penalties that are paid, penalties, other fees that come into the board. In terms of the governor's budget, again, there was the investment in the policy option package that was brought forward. We were able to work with the Human Resources office and obtain a set so that the investigators are now required to be CPAs, and that was saved by reducing the position to a half-time. So the net reduction to the board was, you know, $2,500 out of a $2.6 million budget. And there were adjustments to the DAS and to the DOJ fees that were done as part of the governor's process on a statewide basis, and those also were incorporated into the governor's budget. And that is the end of the presentation. If there are any questions.
Perfect. Any questions from the committee? I think we're good.
Sirs.
All righty. Okay. We're to that point where we have time for additional public hearing. Does anyone want to share any thoughts? Or are we good? We're good. All right. That's a good sign. That's a really good sign. Question. Yes, Representative Moss.
Well, I just have a general comment that I'm going to put on the record for future consideration, which is, as a newbie to this committee, I've been struck by the fact that several times we're continuing to hear a similar story in terms of a board coming forward that has pulled itself out of disarray over years past. And it's starting to feel like a pattern. And I just wonder if it wouldn't be useful to schedule at some point just a conversation and maybe some expert witnesses here as to what the characteristics are that we need to have in place, especially for these small boards, what kind of supervision they get, what made the difference for them, so that we can learn some lessons out of this, because it seems to be an ongoing story. Certainly we've heard it a number of times.
It's a great idea. Thank you. All righty. Any other comments or questions? Kim, anything we need to think about?
Nope, I think that's it. Tomorrow you will have the Board of Tax Practitioners.
Awesome. Michael, anything we need to think about?
No, sir.
We're good? All right. see no other items before us, we're going to adjourn for the day. Thank you.
So this is really interesting.
Thank you.
So this is really interesting.
Adjourn for the